Yes. Hi, Gabrielle. It's Marilyn Cade. Let me lend my welcome as well.
Tony Holmes here.
Tony, are you welcome?
I'm saying quite bad. Anyway, I thank you all people for my receiving.
I've just sent out the number, Philip.
Right.
Yeah. Brian Forsyth here.
Grant, you're welcome.
Gary here, too.
Gary, hello.
Hiya.
Is Ellen with us yet? No, it doesn't sound like it. And who else we're expecting? Ken, we're expecting?
We're expecting Ken.
Tony Harris.
Tony Harris had a problem with the...
That's for the number, yeah. Right. And Greg?
Greg, normally, yes. He's
yeah. And Jordan, right.
And Harold Felt, I believe.
And Harold, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
This is Louis Tuton.
Louis, you're welcome.
Hello, Louis.
Hi, Glenn.
Louis, are you with us to listen in, or have you got some messages to impart about the process or anything?
I wanted it mostly to impart just a brief message.
Okay. Well, then perhaps once we start, I'll ask you to do that.
How many do you have now?
We're 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I calculate.
Oh, wow.
Ken Stubbs checking in.
Ken, you're very welcome.
And Wendy Seltzer in from the ALAC.
Wendy, welcome indeed. And who's just joined?
Philippe, hello, it's Laurence on the phone.
Laurence, welcome.
How many people do we have on the call so far, approximately?
We've got about 10 callers, I think 10 council members, perhaps 9 council members, plus Glenn and Louis.
And Wendy.
And Wendy, indeed, yes. Just going to give it another minute or so, because there are some people who said they would be joining us, and we don't have them yet. And who has just joined us?
This is Harold joining.
Harold, you're welcome.
You might, last conference call here.
Indeed, yeah.
Well, Harold, I don't know how old you are, so I don't know whether you have ever heard of the Sons of the Pioneers, but I'm trying to find a tape of Happy Trails to You.
I've actually been looking for one.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to find, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Good morning, Tony Harris joins.
At the end of the old Roy Rogers television show, they always used to sing that song, you know, Happy Trails to You.
Okay, well, I think before we go on to the second line, I shall take a roll call.
Actually, the second line is extraordinarily appropriate to council business.
Well, then please state it.
Until we meet again.
Okay. we have Marilyn and Grant from the BC, plus myself, the Crassius Chair. We have Laurence from the IP. Is Ellen with us? Ellen Shankman. No, not yet. We have, is Tune with us? No, but we have Gabrielle, I think, from Argentina, and Harold from the non-commercials. I've heard Ken from the Greater Stars. Bruce, I don't think, is with us. We have Tony Harris from the ISPs and Greg with us or not? Greg Ruth? No. And Tony Holmes also is with us, I think. And for the moment, from the GTLDs, we only have Carrie. Is Jeff with us yet? No. Or Jordan? No. And then we have Wendy also from the ALAC. So let's make a start. Who's just joined us?
Hi, Greg Ruth joining.
Greg, you're welcome. I've just taken a roll call, so you're now in there. We've got about 10 or 12 callers on the line, and I'm just about to start. Yes?
Could I, just a question. I hear an echo in your voice. Does anybody else hear it?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Maybe
it seems to be a common problem then.
I'm not sure that it's Philip, though, because it was not on when at the beginning of the call, when it was just Philip and Glenn and me.
It isn't Philip. It's common to all of you. I've heard every person who's spoken in the last couple minutes has echoed.
Okay. But you don't have an echo, Ken.
Well, I'll be happy to call.
But you do, Tony Harris.
I know. Yeah, I have an echo. Maybe it's my problem. I'll cut off and call again.
I'll do the same thing, Tony. Maybe it'll clear out that way.
Okay. I do the same, Philippe, because I just cannot hear anything now.
Do it one at a time. Don't do it both. One at a time. Otherwise, you're never going to figure it out.
I guess we'll never figure it out.
If the echo's still there, because it means the rest of us are at least...
Is it better now, or... No, I still have an echo, in fact.
Okay, it means that it's one of us who's on the line now that's the culprit. So,
okay.
So how is it now?
Do we have an echo now?
Yes.
And I'm hearing a distant echo, not one that is a problem in terms of...
Gary, I'll go out to and see what happens.
Okay.
How is it now?
Who's left to hear the echo?
Still there. I'll go out as well now.
Tony Harris back on board.
Tony, you're welcome back. We've lost almost everybody else, but you're welcome back.
Jordan Buchanan joining the call.
Who is just joining then from
Jordan,
you?
Jordan.
Jordan. Hello, Jordan. You're welcome. Jordan. We're just having a bit of fun and games here because we had an echo on the line and we're trying to identify who was the guilty party. And people have signed off and come back on again.
Yes.
I think I still have an echo, right?
Yes.
So I'll shut up then and listen.
But I'm not sure. Tony, I don't think it was necessarily you because the echo continued after you had left us. That's a
Philip,
very nasty sound.
Philip.
Yes?
Would you like me to give you a different bridge number to call into once people get back on?
We could do that. I mean, the echo for others is a problem in hearing, is it?
The service you're using is not an AT&T service, so I'm not proposing that I would be proposing, but I'm happy to give you a bridge number if you would like to use it.
I think Philip was asking whether people could manage the current call or not.
Yeah.
I think
I'm okay. I think we could just go ahead with the call. I mean, it's a little distracting, but you can all understand it better.
Okay, then we will continue. What I was going to ask, we have Louis is with us. He's got a couple of things he wanted to say, so I'm going to let him say that first. I'll then do a round of the constituencies to see how they are progressing in terms of any statement or position on this topic, and then we'll see what work we can do based on the papers we've received so far. So Louis, please make a start.
Yes, I wanted just to talk for a moment off of topic of this committee of the whole, but about the elections for seats 14 and 13 to the board. Bruce Tompkin and I circulated to the list a couple of memos yesterday regarding the procedures. I will be circulating one or two more today. Our goal is to solidify all of the rules before the voting starts so that no one is surprised and so that contention is minimized. The documents yesterday described the schedule and the manner in which votes are counted. I will circulate one memo today just describing the disclosure of voting rules, which will be closely tailored from what has been what's followed in the past by the DNSO. In addition, if anyone has any questions or ambiguities they see in the procedure, please send them to me today, and to the extent appropriate, I'll try to put them in a memo. That way we'll have a written record of everything that was established before the voting, and hopefully that'll be of guidance if anything comes up during the voting in terms of a dispute about how something should be handled.
If I may just make one suggestion, I don't know if the candidates have been CC'd on any of this just for information purposes. I know in the email, I think somebody said they would like to see written statements from the candidates on their thoughts and positions, and there are several nominees who are not on the council list, and so it would, I think it's useful if the candidates receive similar information just so they know what's going on.
Okay, well, I think that's a very good suggestion, Harold. When I get these out and 12 hours or something have passed so that anybody can complain promptly if they've got any kind of complaint about what's stated in them, Glenn and I will compile them into a new detailed set of procedures, which we will email to each of the candidates. With regard to the point about candidate statements, that has not been a requirement of the council in the past. It has sometimes been required by individual or invited by individual constituencies. So I would propose that it be handled again on that basis unless someone has a different view. I don't hear any different view. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions for Louis on the topic of the elections then? Nope. Then thank you, Louis, for that.
All right. I'm going to depart unless there are any reason for me to be involved in this.
Just one update may be useful for us, Louis, in terms of names. The status of one, the evaluation process of previous GTLDs, and secondly, the status of moving forward with the three sponsored GTLDs in the interim.
Okay, let me deal with the second one first. Moving forward with the three or other limited number, I should say, if you recall the discussion in Amsterdam, number of sponsored TLDs as a short-term event is proceeding. We are hoping to have available for the entity to review a set of criteria proposed to be applied in time for the late March meeting in Rio. Also, a evaluation has gone forward with of the extent of compliance by the existing sponsored TLDs with their charters, which was one of the items in the pathway to that first limited round. And I believe there, without getting into the details, I don't think there's anything in the results of that evaluation that would indicate that the round should not go forward, but of course that will be also a topic for discussion by the community and the board. Moving to your first question, the overall evaluation of the introduction of both sponsored and unsponsored TLDs in 2001 is as recommended by the new TLD Evaluation Process Planning Task Force is just about to begin, probably in the next week or two. Is that responsive to you, Philip?
Okay, that's helpful for me. Any questions for Louis on that?
Excuse me, yes, I'm sorry, Lee. Would you just elaborate just on the last statement you made? It's Marilyn. The evaluation...
Okay, the action plan for new TLDs that was discussed and acted on by the board, I believe, in Amsterdam, called for a limited number of sponsored TLDs to be introduced in the short term, contingent on a analysis of compliance of existing sponsored TLDs with their charters.
Right.
That was the first part of what I described. I don't think you're asking about that.
Right.
Then there was to be, the second element was for the GNSO to be asked to give its views regarding structuring of namespace and so forth, which is what this committee is doing.
Right.
And then the third thing was to evaluate the new TLDs that were introduced in 2001, et cetera.
Right.
Based on the priority criteria that were in the NTEP report.
Right.
And I was just saying that I believe the personnel for that have been assembled, and it's about to begin efforts. But that's not a quick process.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That was what I was asking about. Thank you.
All right. Anything else from anybody?
Hi, Ellen Shankman joining.
Ellen, you're welcome. We're just having ending a Q&A session with Louis on the future of the interim movement of names and the evaluation of previous names.
Okay, thank you. I apologize for joining late.
Okay, no problem. Any further questions, any final questions for Louis? Nope, looks like you're off the hook, Louis. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you much. Bye.
Bye. Right, so let's move on with this meeting and around the constituencies to find out where we are in terms of position papers. As you know, the original target was to have had, before this meeting, some sort of position or statement from each constituency so that we could each see where we were or be sharing ideas. And we've now had input from just two constituencies, the BC and the non-commercials. Perhaps I could just go around the others and you could indicate to me what your status is on that process. And may I start with the IPC, Laurence or Ellen?
Ellen, if you want.
The IPC is meeting in New York on Friday, as some of you may be aware. We have not had a chance to adequately discuss it because everybody's been caught up rather with the board nominations and a number of things. But I think that we're still not clear exactly on what is meant or what is intended by how much of the structure we're supposed to cover. And so if we could get some kind of clarification or some discussion a little bit prior to that meeting, I know that I unfortunately will not be on that call. Laurence will be calling in, but we'd be happy to convey to the group what it is that you'd like done so that after Friday's meeting we can give you a better picture.
Okay, thank you for that. Registrars, Ken. Ken Stubbs, are you with us? Maybe we lost him. Let's go down. ISPs, Tony.
Is Tony Holmes on the call?
Yes.
Maybe you'd like to address it, Tony.
Okay. It's always confusing when you say Tony, Philip.
Yeah, sorry.
And if you say Tony H, it's still
confusing. Even worse.
Basically, we're at the stage where we haven't finalised the detail. We obviously are in support of the structured approach, but the finalised detail we are still discussing, and we should be in a position where we can have a paper out shortly, but at this current time it isn't finalised.
Okay, I mean, are you thinking of a couple of days or a few weeks, or what do you think?
I would think we're looking at a week.
About a week. Okay, very good. And DTLDs, Carrie or Jordan?
Yeah, Carrie, are you there?
I'm here.
Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I'm actually responsible for the little working group that we've set up to deal with this. But our deliberations haven't progressed to the point where we have a paper. We've also been quite preoccupied with the discussion about the board elections. So one of the things I might want that might be useful is if we rearticulated the deadline and perhaps were a little bit more focused on our role here. The first meeting we had, there was some discussion about what actually we're supposed to be talking about. So if there was just a little bit more clear statement of purpose that I could transmit to my people, it would be easier for me to
expedite
the process.
And would your own timing be similar to ISP's, about a week or so, or do you need longer?
Yeah, I think so. We are in reasonably frequent touch about a variety of current issues, so injecting some sense of urgency about this one into the process shouldn't be too difficult.
Thanks for that. Back to Peter Strauss. Ken, are you with us? No, I have to get to them.
Philip, could I just comment? It's Tony Holmes again. Having heard what the other constituencies or the other two constituencies have said, I think they're struggling with part of the same set of issues that we are on this. So if we could get out of today some clarification of some of those points, then it would really help move this on.
Okay, I mean, I think we are going to get nowhere if we try to second guess what we think the board might have been thinking of. I think basically they've asked us what was clarified by Louis in terms of two fairly straightforward questions as to whether or not, which were whether to structure the evolution of the GTLD namespace, and if there should be structuring, how to do so. Which means very much they're just looking at some broad ideas, and if the answer to the first one is yes, then they're looking for broad ideas in terms of what the nature of structuring could be, and I think it's as simple as that. And so the input.
So if this is Ellen, I don't mean to make it any more complicated than that, but I still don't get it. I'm really trying to. But what is it that's meant by structuring? Again, I think the same conversation we had last time was just trying to understand, are they talking about policy structure, which I'm assuming they are because that's why they're coming to us, but how broad are we supposed to be looking at this? Because, again, as I said, if we're looking at just saying basically, well, under any structure we think that they should be sponsored TLDs, the IPC, you know, can turn around your paper in 30 minutes. If, on the other hand, we're going back to reopening everything that we've discussed about any further structure, then I don't know how to answer your question on a deadline.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the nature of the input you've just given in the, you know, the IPC would support, you know, a structure of sponsor names is very useful input, and that's precisely the sort of thing that we would need. I mean, I think it may be easiest, kind of a second, but maybe just easy to answer this by example. If you look at the two papers we've received so far, the BC paper is setting out what it believes should be the nature of a structured space. It's giving a set of principles in terms of how names themselves should be chosen, and saying that they should be sponsored, and they give various other information in terms of the nature of registries and the sponsors. So there is one example of structuring. If we look at the non-commercial paper, they are not specifying anything in terms of a preference between sponsored or non-sponsored names, but there are nevertheless various conditions in terms of how they think things should move forward in there. I think it's really as simple as getting those ideas together, seeing how broad they are, and then seeing what buy-in we can get to a group to these ideas. Is my feeling. But anyway, let's move on. And Carrie, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I have some recollection of Stuart having clarified a bit of this for us in letting us know that we are not addressing policy issues. We are simply addressing the issue of the extent to which the namespace should be structured prior to the opening of another call for TLDs. I'm not even sure we were asked to comment on whether that should be restricted to sponsored or unsponsored, although we certainly can say what we think. But there's this very obvious thing that there's a minimum structure to any top-level domain, and that, a minimum nomenclatural structure, and that is that it has to have a name. So if we recommend that every top-level domain must have a unique identifier located at the far right of the domain name, the right of left of the invisible dot. We've made a statement, and what we're talking about is there anything beyond that that any of us feel should be injected into the discussion?
Yes, I'd agree with that.
But did you get, Philippe, did you get more feedback from...
All the feedback I had, I have circulated to the council, and by, to the group, I beg your pardon.
Sorry, this is Jordan. Can I just add a quick
comment? Jordan, yeah?
Yeah, I think there's two tasks incumbent upon us. One, I think, is, I mean, I read both Stuart's clarification, and as we know from the last call, the original board resolution fairly clearly in asking us to to answer a question just about how the namespace itself should be structured, not the process or selection criteria, sponsored versus unsponsored, and so on. However, I think Stuart made a good point that we as a names council are free to provide any input we want about the progression of the namespace. So I think we're free to sort of provide the more broad input that we've seen so far from the BC and the non-commercial constituencies. But I think at the very minimum, we need to make sure that part of the question we're answering is that first one of whether there should be some sort of well-defined taxonomic structure to the namespace. And I'm not sure, actually, that we get, so far we've seen a lot of clarification of that particular point. So that should, I think, be a minimum criteria of the position that we forward to the board. And then whatever other questions we want to get into, we're free to, because we can forward whatever naming-related information we want to the board.
Yeah, if I could just...
And Philip, can I get in the queue after...
Yep, so hang on, I got Harold wanting to say something, and then Marilyn, anyone else?
Can I just mention, I've just been contacted by Ken Stubbs via another channel, and he wants you to know that he's having difficulty getting back into this call, but he is trying.
Okay, thanks.
I just wanted to expand on what Jordan was saying. It's one thing if the board has said that there are things they don't want to hear about, but I don't think that's the case here. They've initiated a consultation on a specific point, but clearly since they're considering the broader issues of expanding the CLC space, I think it would be wise for all of the constituencies, based on our experiences in the last few years, to at least try to put their general thoughts in some sort of structured way to the mix here.
Okay, Marilyn.
I would like to support that, as Jordan and Harold said, and also note that we have the opportunity now to have the active participation consultation of the ALAC through Wendy's participating, joining us, and I think that we should really try to offer thoughtful advice and counsel. That is, after all, pardon the pun, what the council is supposed to be doing.
All right, thank you. One of the things I was planning on just trying on this call was to see where there are areas of common ground between the positions we have so far, and to see in general if that common ground is also wider. In other words, we can get rid of some of the other stuff quickly, and then move on to areas where there may be greater debate.
I'd like to actually comment on your analysis and offer two edits to it when you reach that point.
Okay, no problem. So if we're happy, we'll do that. And I'd circulated, I think, on the 3rd of March, just a very brief analysis based on looking at the two papers received so far.
This is Tony Harris. It may be a problem with my email server, but I can't find those two papers anywhere.
Ken Stubbs rejoining. I'm sorry, I had a terrible...
Ken, you're welcome.
I'm sure they were circulated, but
they
seem to have vanished into...
This is Carrie. You know, I've seen both papers, and I'm not quite sure that I saw them because they landed in my email box either.
Okay, I'll circulate again to the council.
Thank
while
you.
I'm speaking. So if anybody has direct access to email on the call, they will be able to see this. Otherwise, talking to it was quite a short email, so it shouldn't be too much of a problem. That's gone. So what I'd said there was the following were a points of common ground. I'll read the list first, and then we'll go back and take them point by point. A demand-driven approach to new names, a bottom-up approach with names proposed by interested communities or registries. Names can be commercial or non-commercial as demand dictates. Names are assigned upon the request of a technically qualified registry, and there's a question about that in terms of pre-qualification or sort of promise to be meet the right criteria.
Can I ask a question on that one?
I'm going to come back to all of them. Yeah.
Okay.
The idea that one registry can operate multiple domains. A registry need not be linked to any one name, therefore, and that names in a variety of languages would be possible. So taking the first two, if are linked, the concept of a demand-driven approach or bottom-up approach with names proposed by the communities to ICANN in some way, I presume is something that would be generally supported. Would that be correct?
Philip, this is Ellen.
Yes.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
I haven't seen the list that you just sent. I don't know. I mean, that you just read off. I don't know if that's in front of you and has been sent around or not.
Yes, it was, and I've also just resent it to the council.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
It was an email on March 3rd.
Right.
I appreciate it. I know there have been a number of them. That checklist will be helpful to put before the IPC on Friday.
Okay.
But I think getting sort of checklist form will be the fastest way to get your answers back.
Yeah, perfect. Then you should have that by now.
Great, thank you.
Interrupt. This is Harold. I'm entering a garage here, and we'll be back on the call in a few minutes.
Okay, Harold, that's noted.
Can I get in the queue for questions?
Indeed. You can start the questions.
Okay, this is Tony Harris. On the names assigned upon request of a technically qualified registry, does that mean that it has to be a registry with a contract signed with ICANN?
Well, that was one question that came out, and the fact that Milton had raised, Milton Muller, because he had made some commentary to this analysis. And I think the BC paper was essentially suggesting that that there should be a set of criteria that registries had to comply to, and it's an open question, I suppose, whether or not you have essentially pre-qualification of those registries who are then able to apply to a name, or if the registries merely have to make the promise to meet those criteria.
You have to have a standard or something, right?
Exactly,
have to
yes.
Comply
yes.
with.
Now, I guess I'll be right in saying, perhaps, Jordan, you could advise, in the past, the system has been basically the registries have made a promise to a certain standard.
Philip, it's Marilyn. Can I ask a point of clarification? I think the point is that the award does not happen until there's demonstrated, right? The award is that there's an award of a contract, but the name does not go live until there's demonstrated capability. Is that the question you're asking, Jordan?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Because if you had to have a registry up and running before you bid, you obviously would never have any new entrants.
Indeed, it's a question of when that is agreed to or promised or whatever. Yeah. But I think the question had arisen out of the BC paper, though, with the suggestion that because registries could have multiple domains, you may have registries which are already. Have proven capability, if you like. So there's nothing further to prove. I guess that was the
question
raised.
No, actually, I don't agree with that. Because a registry is up and operating does not mean that it has the ability to add an additional name, particularly a multilingual name, and manage it. There would still be a need to demonstrate the technical capability.
Okay, so your view would be no change in the way the process happened in the past.
That's right.
The part of the contract award would be conditional upon that demonstration.
Of the demonstration of the capability,
yeah.
Which may mean adequate financing. It may mean the ability to contract a registry. As I understand it, need not operate the registry themselves, but could choose to outsource the back office.
Philip, can you put me in the queue on this one?
Yep, indeed, you can speak now.
I guess the one thing I would want to make sure would be, though, that the ability for the proposing registry to adequately service the community, whether it be either by normal methodologies for domain registrations or IDNs, should be ascertained at the outset.
Right.
I would want to have a situation where the community would have to decide that a registry could do it one way, but another registry would have to do it another way. It would seem to me that the maybe Marilyn and I are agreeing on that point. I don't need to take it any further.
We are, I think, Ken.
Okay. I'm Carrie to speak, too. I'm not sure it's my turn.
Okay, you go ahead, yes.
Okay. I'm not sure if I'm agreeing or disagreeing with anybody, but there's a further extremely tricky issue here, and that is it's probably easy enough to state policy if we can make reference to the identification of a string, but there are also multiple language representations of the same string that use the same character sets. So we need to address both IDN equivalence and language equivalence in whatever state
in a way that you're
about this. Yeah.
Okay, demonstrating the technical qualification. Yeah, that's a good point.
Right.
Okay. So, in his points of common ground, there were three categories. The one we just discussed to do with the nature of the registry and demonstrating technical qualification. I'm not hearing anybody say there should be anything fundamentally different to the way that's happened in the past. And the approach in terms of the bottom-up approach with the interested community or registry making its proposals to ICANN is also the common ground at the moment. The opposite of that happening is ICANN comes up with a list of names and offers it to the community to bid for them, and I'm not hearing anybody suggesting that second process. Would that be a correct assumption?
I'd like to speak on that topic.
Marilyn, go ahead.
But there may be others as well.
And anybody else like to speak on that? Okay.
I'm going to address the topic in a slightly different way. I'm comfortable with that if the TLD remains an award from ICANN to the bidder. The thing that I cannot support is the idea that that a registry assumes that they own the name. And so if, for instance, the registry goes into bankruptcy, the TLD, the database, et cetera, are sold or become an asset to be disposed of by the bankruptcy court. If a registry, heaven help us, turns out to be taken over by fraudsters and begins engaging in illegal behavior, there needs to be an ability to remove the license or franchise and move the name to a more stable and honorable resource that could manage it. Because this is about expanding the namespace in order for people to build businesses and communications vehicles, both nonprofit and otherwise, on it. And we really don't want the registrants to be held hostage or captive should there be some kind of a technical failure or financial failure.
Okay,
Philip, would you put me in the queue, please?
I would indeed. Jordan, I will. So just a clarification then, Marilyn. At the moment, the registries effectively own the databases and the rights to that data. And in the case of bankruptcy, would be able to do as you...
No, as you suggest.
Is that the current case or not?
That's probably going to be in dispute, and we can certainly ask Louis. And the best thing to do is probably to ask Louis to clarify it rather than argue about it.
That's kind of like my point of order. It might be a good idea to have Louis present a perspective on some of these issues right now, because I think contractually ICANN has in the past, and I certainly would expect in the future, taking the issues that we've just been covering into very careful consideration, and maybe Philip, we might ask Louis.
Yeah, I think that's useful. But essentially, Marilyn, the objective you're trying to address here is what happens in the case of registry failure, that will protect registrants. I mean, that's your concern, and your strategy to achieve that is a concept of who owns the data or whatever. Yeah.
That's one of my concerns.
Carrie, to speak.
Yeah, I have Carrie and then Jordan.
Okay. One of the things that this is actually not a problem with the so-called charter TLDs. STLDs were once chartered, and the STLDs all have a charter. And that charter is actually an instrument that makes it perfectly clear that we haven't given you anything. We have created, ICANN has created .museum and is permitting the sponsoring organization to address certain policy details relevant to the operation of that domain. And I'm not suggesting that that this is an intrinsic attribute of anything being more restrictive than that. So perhaps we should consider injecting the notion of chartering into both sponsored and unsponsored domains rather than equating it only with sponsored.
Okay. Interesting thought. Jordan.
Yeah, I think some of my GTLD colleagues may not like me agreeing with Marilyn on this point, but I do actually wholeheartedly agree that that registry, a name should not be conveyed in terms of ownership to a registry operator, but actually that they're essentially acting as a trustee for the community in operating the name. Having said that, I think Marilyn recognizes a very important point, which is that the reason why it's important is because people are building their businesses around the name that they use or their online identity or whatever they may be using the name for. It's important that the name doesn't just cease to work, that a bankruptcy judge doesn't declare that the obligation to run the registry is not required anymore and so can be done away with, and the data can be sold to someone else who may have no interest in running the registry. Obviously, that serves the community very poorly. But at the same time, the way this has worked in the past is that essentially every few years, the existing registry operation gets rebid out. And so for the same reason why I think it's important that that the registrant can find it to be reliable, that they can continue to operate their name in a reliable manner, I think it ought to be that we have a set of criteria upon which the right to run the name is revoked, essentially, but that in the absence of those criteria being met, if the company remains financially solvent, if it continues to have good practices with regards to the registry operation, doesn't engage in criminal or fraudulent activity, then the name ought to continue to reside with that registry operator rather than having the uncertainty in the sort of business environment of every few years not knowing whether your business is going to exist or not. I think that discourages investment and makes it more difficult for a registry operator to remain stable and viable.
All right. Jordan, the existing contracts have such a criteria to move the name under circumstances of bad faith, effectively, do they?
Yeah, I don't know about bad. I'm actually not the best person legally to talk about the existing contracts. There are certainly some conditions upon which they terminate and the name reverts to ICANN,
right.
But I don't know what those conditions are.
I think that's another question, maybe for Louis for a briefing.
Yeah. Yeah. Good thought.
Yeah, I'd have to agree there, and I think what we ought to do is maybe you're doing this, Philip. I'm going to make a kind of a proposal for a future agenda item. We're bringing up an awful lot of issues that we need some clarification on, and I would suggest that maybe what you could do would be to bring those issues out to the table in a context where Louis could maybe get a heads up in advance as to what we're talking about and be prepared to take some time in our next conference call specifically addressing these issues. And then we could leave some open time after he addresses the issues to expand on any elaborations that we still aren't crystal clear.
Yep, I think it's an excellent idea. I've been making notes as we've gone on. Let's just move on to another of these points of commonality. Fairly easy one to agree to, I guess. Names can be commercial or non-commercial as demand dictates. I presume we'd all be happy with that. Okay. We talked about assignment, and we talked about multiple. Does anybody have a concern about the concept of a registry operating multiple domains?
I'd like to speak to it. It's not a concern, but it's
okay. And would anybody else like to speak to that too?
Yeah, this is Jordan. I could make a comment or two on that.
Okay, fine. Then Marilyn, go ahead.
Infrastructure costs, and those here who are operating infrastructures directly related to registries or registrars, will have a more detailed knowledge than I have, but we do operate infrastructures of all different kinds, some of which are not so dissimilar from providing a registration service. Infrastructure investment costs are, in fact, somewhat considerable. They do range and scale very differently depending on the number of registrations that one has or manages of the services. It's all kind of, you know, we all kind of, at some level, we all kind of understand that. I support the concept of one registry being able to operate multiple domains, but I also support the very critical importance, I think, that a new entrant should also be able to effectively compete. And so if a registry were, for instance, to be what I might call a boutique registry, and there might only be 5,000 names or 10,000 names or 20,000 names in a particular TLD because it's very unique, and I hesitate to even make up an example, and the registry application were technically qualified and had effective financial support and endorsement from its community, I don't think it should be excluded because of that issue. So while we're saying, and I think this is the intent, one registry can operate multiple domains, I think we also would want to ensure that a registry could operate only one domain.
Gary, to speak, please.
Okay, Gary, yes.
Okay, there's
was Jordan on this first? I beg your pardon.
Yeah, no, actually, let Gary go, because he may make a point that I was about to about his own registry anyway.
Okay.
One of the key notions behind an STLD, and I wonder if this is actually not one of the things that some called stewards first to ask us please to consider STLDs, is that the sponsoring organization of an STLD needs to demonstrate that it's representative of the community for which that domain is intended. And it would, on the basis of that, be kind of unlikely that a single sponsoring organization would be able to or even want to be involved in multiple TLDs. An SO, in turn, subcontracts to a provider of technical services, which would equate to the registry operator, as we're currently using the term. So it's entirely reasonable, and in fact, it is the way things are currently being done, that several STLDs are hosted on a shared technical platform. And we don't, I mean, there's nothing new here. We don't need to recommend it. We might want to say it's worth continuing, or if we don't think it's worth continuing, that we register that as well. But we have to be very, very careful in ascribing the correct meaning to the notion of a sponsoring organization and the notion of a registry here.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. Jordan. Yeah, I think... to expand on Carrie's point, I think it's even perhaps broader than that. Even without looking in the context of a sponsoring organization, if we look at, for example, the recent .org redelegation was redelegated to an entity called Public Interest Registry. They don't have any technical infrastructure themselves. They're outsourcing their back-end operation to Afilias. So I think there's actually two questions. Number one is whether the sort of contracting party with ICANN can have one or more registries, and the other is whether or not the technical infrastructure ought to have one or more registries. I think, to a certain extent, the questions are likely to have similar answers. I can't imagine a scenario where you would say that an individual contracting party can only have one registry, but a back-end can have a lot, because that would just encourage a back-end provider to create shell companies or something similar to that, or just work with partners to essentially achieve the same results. So, but I think Marilyn made an excellent point earlier, which is that I think you have to look at the sort of the scope of the infrastructure that's required in terms of evaluating this. But some registries, and we could look at the one that Carrie is involved with, Dot Museum, as an example, has probably extremely lightweight technical requirements. If you compare it to something like .com, which obviously has millions and millions of dollars of infrastructure, it wouldn't be practical or feasible for a small registry operator to make that sort of investment. Yet, it wouldn't be required either, because for the number of names involved, the level of technical apparatus required is simply not at the same level. Having said that, I think it is important that we don't foreclose the opportunity for registry operators to operate more than one TLD, because of the fact that there are existing operators today that have that opportunity, whether we look at VeriSign in the case of CommonNet, or if we look at Afilias in the case of Info and Org, there is some advantage in having a larger number of names. You get into efficiencies of scale. And so as we start to look at larger registry operations, if future registries are prohibited from doing something that current registries are allowed to, I think you essentially set up a huge competitive imbalance in which either you're likely to have a higher price point for these new registries than you do for the old ones, or it will simply be impossible for some new entrants to scale to a certain size and make the required investments in their technical infrastructure.
Do we capture this by saying the word registry, I suppose, may be getting a little bit too narrow for us based on Carry sort of the reminder that you're giving us, but sort of like if I put registries in quotes for just a minute and say registries should not be prohibited from operating multiple domains, is that what we're all saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think perhaps, I mean, that's certainly what I'm saying, and I think I don't know if Carrie's saying that or not, but I wonder to what extent that it seems that the non-commercial paper may disagree with that position. Is that right?
Yeah, I think the paper agrees with that, I believe.
Oh, they did.
For Harold, perhaps you can clarify.
Sorry, this is Harold. I'm back on the call here, and I just want to make sure that I understand what is being suggested here. That is to say that registries should be allowed to have more than one more than TLD. Is that the issue?
Yes.
Yes, well, certainly we agreed with that, and also, at least from what I've been hearing, there are some things that I think that we would not necessarily agree with in what was being discussed, but certainly we would agree with the two major themes that I've been hearing, which is one, that we shouldn't limit necessarily to one registry, although we do need to be worried about competition issues.
Right.
But two, also, not everybody has to have the same infrastructure as .com in order to be a successful registrar.
Which I think captures, I think the dialogue that's gone on, I'm hearing, and maybe a little bit needs to be written up, but I'm hearing general agreement to the sort of concept.
Yes, I think that's exactly what I'm hearing too. Let's just move on to the last point of common ground here, which was to do with the language issue, the suggestion that names in any language should be possible, and I wonder, that to some extent also raises the question of what relationship should there be, if any, between the same word translated.
As opposed to transliterated?
Well, exactly, yes.
Wait. Don't we need to be guided by the other work that is going on within ICANN related to IDN, and
indeed,
remain consistent with that progress?
Carrie to speak,
and I'd like to get in the queue also.
Okay, so we have Carrie and then Harold.
Tony Harris too.
And Tony Harris. Okay.
Here again, I think we have to be very careful about distinguishing the two issues here. The one is the IDNA. I mean, this is going through the IETF standardization process, and to be sure, we are going to feel ourselves bound to recognizing full out the details of the RFCs that are being generated. But then the policy thing, I mean, there's one way is how do you represent a given word in differing character sets? The second thing is how does that set of different character set representations map into TLD policy? So we actually might not want to use the term IDN when talking about the ability of a given... I being responsible for the Latin Museum, do I have any
advanced rights on some other character set or some other language set representation of the precise concept that museum covers. And there's a question mark after this. I'm not claiming anything.
Yes.
But the kind of thing would be wondering. Yeah.
That's to some extent the question that I was raising too.
Yeah.
Tony.
There was somebody ahead of me, I think.
Was it? Harold, I beg your pardon. Yes, there was.
Just to say for our point, we did not intend to get into the IDN issue at all in our paper, and I do want to make that clear. We were concerned much more with the point that Carrie was making, which is, and we've seen this now, you know, in the domain name field where there is some question and conflict about words that have, you know, that are translations or transliterations and that have different meanings and so forth. And since one of the things that was a concern in the first round of selections was that there seemed to be some members of the, there were some concern that people were looking at, you know, the meaning, they say that the board was looking in part at the meaning of the string or even the sound of the string. We want to make clear that we think that something that may just look or sound meaningless to a Western ear may in fact have, you know, valuable semantic meaning, and therefore these criteria should not get in the way of that.
Okay. Tony Harris.
Yes, I'd just like, I mean, you put this phrase as names in any language possible. I'd be more comfortable with something which said names that would not affect the stability of the Internet.
Right, so stability criteria there.
Folks, stability here, is it enough to just get around the IDN, to just say we're not addressing the IDN issue?
Well, but there are technical limitations. If you get into an Arabic character string, it may not be possible today to implement that.
Carrie, to speak again, please.
Okay, Carrie, yeah.
Okay. I was very recently at a meeting about IDNA, where Patrick Feldstrom, who is responsible both for the IETF section and very deeply involved in the IDN stuff as far as ICANN is concerned, made a presentation. And there was a ccTLD operator in the room, .se, and there was an stld operator in the room, .museum. And one of the questions that we asked, actually I was more interested in than .se was we are talking about the IDNification of second-level namespace. Where does the IETF stand on the IDNification of top-level namespace? And the response was that the domain name system is more than robust enough to withstand every conceivable character set representation of every conceivable TLD string that ICANN might want to throw at it. So it is not a technical issue whatsoever. It is a policy issue, and it is a massively intricate policy issue of the type that the IETF ain't going to touch with a 100-foot pole. ICANN, sadly, is in the business of touching these things. Let's not get into the reasons for that or the desirability of that. And I can hear it said from the board right now that what we need to worry about, what we've been asked to do, is tell them what principles might or might not be applied to differentiating one TLD label from another. The degree to which two entities that have requested not terribly well-differentiated labels, the processing of two applications for not terribly well-differentiated labels isn't our concern, and it's not the concern of the recommendations, it's the concern of the ICANN board. And again, the thing that we need to do is decide if differentiation is a structural criteria that we wish to include in the document that we're going to be producing.
Yeah, that's a very good point to lead us forward in the last few minutes of this call. Now, it became very clear, certainly, from the BC position paper that they're saying that differentiation is a key to the future structure as far as they see. You had a less strident approach from the non-commercial paper, but in the follow-up that Milton did, he did make the the interesting point in terms of the avoidance of confusion. And he gave the example that he wouldn't be so concerned if we had a dot per, P-E-R for person, in direct competition to dot name, but he wouldn't like to see a dot com, C-O-M-M, in competition to dot com because of the naturally confusing part of that.
In fairness, by the way, it was Amadeo who raised that latter point up at the discussion in Amsterdam.
Okay. Comments on that distinction?
Philip, it's Merrill. I need a different point of clarification. I was away for just a moment, and I told you that at some point I need to offer two edits to your points with different approach. So before we end the call, I just need to do that.
Okay, that's noted. So comments on this question of differentiation and the distinction of names and an avoidance of names that are confusing. Who wants to talk on that?
I would like to talk on that as well. But might I offer one edit to our chairman's description of the BC perspective as strident?
That's noted.
Perhaps we
not the whole BC, Maryland.
Perhaps we could call it strongly held.
Strongly held convictions.
And Philip, this is Harold. I'd like to get in the queue.
Okay, Harold, you're at the top of the queue. Who else wants to be in this queue?
Jordan, please.
And Jordan, who else? All right, let's do that for a moment. Harold.
Okay, yes, I'd just like to say we can count on registry operators to really try to differentiate their services, and from a consumer point of view, competition is a tremendous boon in this regard because you get all sorts of interesting things at lower prices. Now, everybody will agree there's a difference between competition and deception, and this is exactly the point. You don't want, I'm even willing to say that perhaps we shouldn't have a .USA out there in confusion with the .US CCTLD, not necessarily because it's a three-letter country code, but just because if it were advertised as somehow being official, we had that incident that occurred here where somebody was doing just that. So we do care about things not being unnecessarily confusing, but I would say that we should really trust registries and registrars who are going to want to be in business to act to differentiate and make sure that if there is apparent overlap or apparent redundancy, that their own self-interest will ensure that they serve those communities.
Okay, so as I understand it, you're making essentially three points there that you would indeed not wish to see names that were confusing, names that were that may lead to consumer deception, and the basis for this, of course, is, but you still want to see the creation of new names in terms of the increase of competition. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean somebody might want to start a competitor to .org. I want to be the non-commercial registry, and I think I can do a better job than .org, whatever, and could decide to go into business against .org. And I don't think that they should have to prove, as an initial matter of getting in, that the world needs another non-commercial, generic non-commercial registry, but I wouldn't want them to be called necessarily .org or .org2 because of the confusion that people should know where they register.
Carrie, to speak, please.
Interesting. Carrie, you're on the queue, but Jordan's first.
Yeah, so I think Harold does correctly point out two important issues. One is, obviously, I guess the issue of fraud or confusion. I think it's broader than the issue of fraud, though. Someone could very perfectly legitimately want the want a TLD for communications providers called .comm. Their intent may not be to do anything fraudulent at all, but the scope of the confusion of trying to communicate that your name is AT&T.comm as opposed to com maybe more than most registrants and internet users could probably bear. And the same concept would apply, I think, to as Harold pointed out, USA to US, or any, I think, incredibly similar sounding or probably typographically similar names, because we don't want to create, it's already tough enough. You tell people that they are supposed to go to a .NET site and they type .com anyways. You tell people to, you know, go to a .co.uk and they probably go to .com.uk some large portion of the time. And in order to avoid that level of confusion, I think it's important that we have as much distinction as possible in terms of the namespace. Having said that, there's the second issue then of whether or not there also ought to be distinction in terms of the types of names out there. You know, does it make sense to have both a .ngo and a .org? I'm not prepared actually to, I think there's room for confusion there too, but it's not as obvious to me that the answer to that should be no, but I think that it's worth thinking about whether or not that's going to, in the long run, be confusing to registrants and end users and in order to launch these additional TLDs that have similar, that are intended to have similar meanings, although they may obviously be typographically quite different.
Right. I was talking about, I hope perhaps to the point that Harold was getting to would be where differentiation is becoming a sort of barrier to entry, and there seem to be some disquiet. And I guess you're saying the sort of same the same thing, that somebody could have a legitimate pitch to want to go for an area or interest that somebody else may already be in, but just simply try to do it better in some way. I don't know if that's what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm up in the air on that particular issue.
Yeah.
I think it's an important issue for us to think about. There's a small amount of disquiet that I have about even having sort of similar meanings attached to multiple TLDs, even if, like in the case of .org versus .ngo, there's no chance someone's going to look at one and think it's the other one. But people may just get confused, you know, if it's tough enough to remember, you know, if there's similar named organizations and one of them has an NGO and one of them has an org, you know, is it how are you going to be reliably able to get to one or the other?
Right.
I think there's issues there that are raised we need to think about probably. I don't have an answer to that, but I don't think it's as easy as saying, oh, well, as long as the name's typographically different, let's go ahead and approve it. I think that's something we ought to give some thought to.
Yeah, concept of confusing similarity.
Philip, I'd like to get in the queue.
Okay, Madden, you're in the queue, but I think Carrie is first.
Okay. Yeah, I think we could save ourselves some grief if we were a little bit more rigorous in distinguishing between the nomenclatural aspect of this and the business/policy aspect of all of this. I'm sure there are linguists out there who could point us in the direction of all sorts of normative documents that say how much, what is a reasonable degree of distinction between two three-letter abbreviations or a three-letter and a four-letter abbreviation. This business about, we would recommend that all due effort is made to structure the namespace in a manner that does not generate undue confusion or is capable of deliberate exploitation. That's one issue. The other issue is how different do the businesses need to be that want these strings?
This is Ellen. May I respond to Carrie's first point?
Mallory, are you happy with that?
I'm happy with that. I'm going to address the same issue, but I'm happy with Ellen going first.
Thank you, Marilyn. No, mine's very short. I think, Carrie, it's an excellent suggestion, and I think we can specifically say that, you know, since things can be recommended now to these new advisory boards or pulling in people, that we may suggest explicitly that linguist experts or whatever that committee was that you said, you know, who might do, might specifically be asked.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't Amadeo actually recommend to the board in one of his lengthier contributions to this that linguistic expertise be joined to the effort?
I'm sorry, Marilyn. Go ahead. Thank you.
I'm going to speak to the BC position about the concept of expanding the namespace by differentiation versus duplication, and not dwell on this, but just to note that the namespace does not expand in usability when new names are added and people who are presently registered and have live DNS and live websites must rush into the new space and defensively register, and all they do is point the DNS to their core website. That does not grow anything of value to any economy, nor does it add does it actually really expand the namespace. I think that there is the question of how do you ensure competition while also providing new space for meaningful use. And I agree completely with the concern about undue confusion, deliberate exploitation, those kinds of things. But I also think that if the user who is looking for a nonprofit has to now go search in two different places or three different places because they don't know which space a nonprofit organization would register in, or they don't know which space a business would register in, there needs to be some thought to whether what we've got is sort of more TLDs but dead registrations, so to speak.
Philip, will you put me in a long queue, please?
And I think...
I was, I can.
Yes.
And I think what we were trying to say in the BC is that there ought to be a way to expand the namespace, but not just by cloning it.
If you could, Philip, put me in the queue as well.
Okay. I think Marilyn just finished, so it's Ken first.
Okay. I'm not necessarily going to take issue with Marilyn on some of the points that she raises, but I would say this much. Since 1992, I've been managing and consulting on Internet presence for many major corporations. And when you expand, the expansion of the namespace in many cases allows entities the opportunity of targeting business development activities to new or more closely aligning business development activities to perceived new markets. If all we had to worry about was defensive registrations and redirections, then we would have a lot of difficulty in justifying any expansion in the namespace. But I can guarantee you that, for instance, there are many sectors out there that really need the opportunity of stratifying their presence on the Internet. And I do a significant amount of consulting to leisure, travel, and recreation industries, and I know that it isn't just a matter of them registering a name in a new space and then just redirecting that to their .com site or, in the case of Lufthansa, their .de site. So I think from a practical standpoint, we are very presumptive to presume that we know what's best in terms of managing the space in the future as to what would be best for the communities. I think to some extent we need to spend more time in consulting with the various communities, and I think it has to go deeper than just advocacy organizations. I find that many advocacy organizations tend to be very, very centric, and they seem to be principally concerned with preventing expenditure of additional funds in defensive registration. But yet at the same time, I've been involved in the past with travel and recreation, and I know for a fact that a significant number of those organizations are very concerned about being able to find a space where they can segment themselves and create a specific identity. And I think you'll find that would be the case in many of the other restricted, especially the restricted, my God, the library community, the museum community, the cultural community. I can see a tremendous need there for them to be able to segment and help the public get to the right space as they would perceive it, not the right space as we would perceive it. Thank you.
So, again, what you're saying there in terms of the need for segmentation, you're agreeing with the point Marilyn was making to a broad extent in terms of differentiation and differentiated segmentation. Is that correct?
Well, what I'm saying is it's very difficult in many cases for us to determine what differentiates, and I think we run into a very, very precipitous route there. And I think that any constituency who purports that it has the capacity to decide what's best for the users, whether it would be the registries, the registrars, the BC, the IP, is really who was the deal that said that their ego is cashing checks that their bank can't cover, if you know what I mean. I apologize, I can't remember exactly how that's supposed to come out. But yes, in many ways I'm agreeing with Marilyn, but I'm not agreeing that the principal reason is to prevent existing entities from having to defensively register. I think there's methodologies out there today that significantly protect many of those concerns and deal with those concerns. And if you look at the precipitous decline in the number of UDR filings over the last 6 to 8 months, I think that speaks very well to that point. I'd very much like to hear more from IP on that, but that's just my own perception.
Okay, I'm going to end the call shortly, but Harold, you were on the queue.
Yes, thank you. I agree with a number of things that Kenton was saying in terms of I think there is an untapped demand out there by would-be registrants who would like an opportunity to have a differentiated space, and would-be registries who would like to offer differentiated services. I think, and one point that I think grows out of what Ken is saying, is we need to keep in mind that Internet users have become increasingly more sophisticated. I mean, assumptions that were made in 96 and 97 and 98 about how people utilized the DNS, how people used the net, need to be reevaluated and changed. This is not... In many areas of the world, this is no longer even a new technology, and in a lot of the world, there is still a lot of penetration that has happened. I think that we should give credit to the ability of registries and registrars who will want to make sure that these things are differentiated and recognizable, and this is the means by which users find them. I think that trying to guess the market and its evolution is a very perilous task, and to the extent that there is concern about consumer protection and abusing these things, that we should focus on post hoc remedies like UDRP rather than prophylactic measures like trying to make sure that the namespace remains with what we conceive today as being orderly.
Philip, I'd like to
address Harold's
comments because he did specifically refer to me in there real quick.
Yeah, okay.
The only thing I would like to say is, given I agree to a great extent with your elaboration, at the same point in time, I would like to use a simple analogy. I don't see the idea of dyeing a cow a different color and calling it a horse. So, for all intents and purposes, I think that there has to be some specificity. I can't even get the word out. I think you all know what I mean. Thank you.
Okay, Ken, I think we ought to start making record of your metaphors on these calls. Excellent. I'm going to end the call here now. I think it's been a very useful discussion. I will do a note summarizing... where we are, Marilyn.
I need to offer my two edits.
Please offer your edits now, briefly.
On Philip's summary of points with a different approach, the first point says that the BC specifies no limit. I think that needs to be clarified, and in fact, we are silent on that issue in the paper, but have expressed in a number of settings concerns about the impact on the stability. So I'm not sure that saying no limit actually accurately conveys the broad...
Okay, so not specified would be more accurate.
On point number three, where it's first come, first serve, the nature of the sponsor may be deciding factor. I would prefer that you strike come, first serve. That means something different in different cultures. I believe the intent was to focus on nature of the sponsor would be the deciding factor.
Okay, no problem. So I will make a summary of our call so far with the points of agreement, points where we've asked a number of open questions, and also those points where we may be seeking some clarification, and we'll see if Louis can give those clarifications to us on a future occasion. Our next scheduled call is about a month's time, but of course a number of us will be meeting in Rio before then as the council, and maybe perhaps we'll see what feedback we get in the next week or so from other constituencies, and if so, I'll see if there's perhaps time to schedule a short meeting of this committee during the time in Rio, if that sounds like any acceptable plan.
Yes.
Very good. Anybody want to make any last comments before we close?
Sure. I've been mostly listening in here, Wendy Seltzer from ALAC,
yep.
And just wanted to offer our consultations because we do think that new top-level domains is something of great import to at-large.
Indeed.
As we are trying to work out the at-large structures, we would also be thinking about ways that at-large can usefully contribute to the discussions here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Wendy, thank you very much for that. We welcome very much your participation and your continuing participation also. Will you be in Rio yourself?
Yes.
You will, okay. That's good. Then we have a chance, those who don't know you, to meet you face-to-face.
Stephen, are you going to send the report on the call before tomorrow so that we can maybe forward to the IPC?
Before tomorrow, just because the IPC has got a meeting tomorrow. I will probably be doing it European time tomorrow, and as your meeting is in New York, it should therefore get to you in time.
Oh, yeah, it will be at 5 o'clock for
6 o'clock. Yeah. Okay, then the answer is probably yes. Okay, everybody, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, bye.
Thanks, bye. Philip?
Yes, Glenn, I'll stay on.
Okay.
Wait for the bells to go.
Are all the bells gone off?
I think so.
Yes. There are four candidates left. I must. Jonathan Cohen and Susan Crawford withdrew.
Okay.
But I must get onto Louis now to ask him what we're going to do about the voting, because he said he wanted to get procedures out before we started voting.
Yes, because he was saying to us, wasn't he on the call just now, that he had a plan. So indeed. So you can check with him and then post,
yes,
something that you both agreed to. Yeah, sounds like the plan.
Okay. Thanks, Philip.
The conference organizer has left the conference. The conference is now over.